Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Welcome, Moors and Moors Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bay. And this evening, we have as our special guest the Grand National Chairman of the Moorish American Government, Part 3. He will be telling us his story. And this evening, we will also hear from his wives as well. But before we get started, I want to say that we are offering our free articles as usual, the 14th Amendment Exposed. Those of you who have never received that, the 14th Amendment Exposed, the Commerce Game and How to Play, as well as Secrets of America, go ahead and send me an email to tahaka53@hotmail.com, and I'll rush that to you. If you are on your social sites, go ahead and send a friend request to Tahaka Amana L. Bay, and I'll grant that friend request. That'll give you access to my wall. You can listen to the broadcast over and over. You can read important articles that we place there for your education. Now, one other thing, I want to mention that on the August the 16th through the 18th, we'll be hosting our Suckin' Moorish Summit right here in Jacksonville, Florida. So make sure you put a marker on your calendar. If you got any questions in regards to what's going on, give me a call at area code 904-303-9061. The chat room is open. The number to call if you have questions or comments is area code 310-982-4184. Now, to register with your government, you go to MoorishAmericanGov.org and fill out the registration form. Get all your family members and put their names on there. And the national conference calls are held 7 days a week, starting at area code 760-569-7100. And the access PIN is 437-966-pound. That's 760-569-7100. Access PIN 437-966-pound. And that's held 7 days a week, starting at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and twice on Sunday. So make sure that you tune into the national conference calls. Very, very important information is discussed there. Very important historical information is discussed there. You got questions and answer period where you can ask a question if you got one, and they open up the line so you can ask your question, okay? The Grand National Chairman, Elihu Pleasant Bay, is the author of two books, Noble Drew Ali, The Exhuming of a Nation, and The Book of Ali. And there are other books, too, that you can access right there at MoorishAmericanGov.org, okay? And we're going to go ahead, and it appears that my guest has arrived. I'm going to go ahead and open up the line so that he can lead us in prayer, and we can begin. Grand National Chairman, are you with us?
This is Sister Aisha Pleasant Bay.
Okay.
I'm on a separate line.
Okay. All right. Hold on a moment. Okay. Grand National Chairman.
All right. I'm here.
Okay. I mashed the wrong button. Two magic number looking like I got confused on them. I don't have that number open up. If you can lead us in prayer, we are ready to begin.
All right. I love the Father of the Universe, the Father of love, truth, peace, freedom, and justice. Allah is my protector, my guide, and my salvation, by night and by day, through his holy prophet, Drew Ali. Amen.
Amen. Okay. These are the questions that I plan to ask, and I'm pretty sure that some of the other people will have some later on in the broadcast when we open up the lines. My questions are as follows. What does the current your current wives have to say about the your historical circumstances? How can polygamy be legal in America, and how many countries around the world recognize Moorish marriage, and what happened at the UN in the 1960s? These will be the questions that I'm looking for answers to. But whichever one of those you want to take or whatever you want to come on and finish up where we pick up from where we left off at, that'll be fine.
Well, I certainly appreciate that, Ma. Thank you so much. Let me just begin by giving praises to the one great God, the God of our forefathers, the God of all nations, the God of everything that ever is, was, and ever more to be. And I also want to stand honor to all the prophets of all times and climes, from Adam to Drew Ali. And send honor to also to you, too, Brother Tahaka Amani Elbey, because you have been doing a tremendous job getting information out to the Moors with your blog talk, not only with your blog talk radio show, but also with your books and information that they're making accessible. And this has been the first time in ages this has ever been done, that we have our own library, so you would be commended for that. And any way we can contribute to that, just let us know. I would like to, because the sister will be featured tonight, the Pleasant Bay Wives, so before we get to Mecca and Aisha, I would like to cap off with the Pleasant Bay story, part three, dealing with our own should I say, outside of the story, because a lot of people have been talking about Pleasant Bay this and Pleasant Bay that, and he changed this, he did that, and so forth and so on. A lot of hatred has been going on, and most of it, in fact, the majority, I'll go so far as to say all of it, has been promoted by people that have either never even talked to me or don't know the truth about what's really going on. So I would like to start off with your latter question, dealing with the what happened at the UN in the 60s, and then bring it up from there. What happened at the UN in the 60s, this is during a time when Malcolm had raised a noise through the Islam, raised a noise at the UN, as well as The Hague, which is up in the Netherlands. And what had happened, he had actually brought up a charge of genocide against the United States, because it was revealed there that the United States had never once signed the in the 25, 30 years or whatever that the UN had been in existence at the time, but it had never signed the genocide treaty. And so Malcolm got very upset by him being so much world renowned, very upset about it. And, of course, even to that day, Farrakhan did the same thing years later, as well as others. They've gone to the UN. But see, one thing about going to the UN, you're not going to be recognized unless you are a nation of people. That's why they call it the United Nations. It's not United Organizations, United Religions. It's not, no. I mean, you can take many griefs there and complaints and things. And they may be heard, but they don't have to give it a kind of a, should I say, attention that it would if you are a recognized government. And so with the genocide treaty that the United States has never signed, even to this day, here in the year 2000, it's never been signed. And the reason why, they say, is because they have too many illegal aliens in their midst that's subject to create civil unrest. Of course, here lately they've introduced other things from paper terrorism on down to whatever, civil disobedience from amongst the populace. And but this is one of the main things that was revealed. But Malcolm charged the United States with genocide of a black people. Farrakhan later, well, the Negro people, and Farrakhan later with the black people. The thing about it is that after they checked the records, they could not find any of these people attached to the human family. There was no nation of black people. There was no nation of Negroes or colored people, none of this stuff. And so they could not really be, you know, the question that was never really given any life to them, because they didn't have any comprehension as to the value of being a nation of people bearing your own free national name. And in other words, you, only through your free national name are you attached to the human family of nations. And this right here is a precedence that has been in the forefront of the mission of the Morris American government as well, because there has been a tremendous amount of splinter groups and organizations and religions and republics and changing the name and mirrors and making it, but none of these things are attached to the human family of nations that's recognized as by the descendant nature of your nation. It's not recognized by the other nations of the earth. There's a family tree that was held sacred throughout the capital of Africa, if you will, Egypt, Kemet, and for many millenniums, and until recent times when the European began to dominate the globe in the present-day format. And now the head of the one that holds the history of the family tree is Geneva, in Geneva, Switzerland. And they're the ones that hold sacred all the nations and descendant lines of the family tree. Now, the importance of this is that when we went to the UN in 05 and again in 07, it was revealed at this time that the Morris American as a people was back. And with the Declaration Proclamation that's in Chapter 23 in my book, Noble Drolley, the Exhumant of a Nation, it's also on our websites, the Morris American, MorrisAmericanGov.org, as well as the Seven Seals Publications. They're there for a reason, this particular Declaration Proclamation, because this was the only document that was accepted, promoted, and encouraged by the entire delegation from Geneva, Switzerland, as recognizing the Moorish people as, or should I say, to recognize the return of the Moorish people. This is how important it is. So these are, and we're not speaking negatively about the Moorish Science Temple, but the Moorish Science Temple is not a nation. It's not a government. It's impossible. Anything that's developed or born or established or founded in 1913 to be anything other than an organization. You must have a longer descendant line, a heritage, to pass on or to derive from your ancient forefathers that you can pass on to your descendant line for tomorrow, your children, into the future. And you can't do that if you are carrying on the same tidings or slave labels that was passed on to you in recent times. For example, Negro, black, colored, or there's a lot of organizations calling themselves mirrors now, M-U-U-R-S, There's other titles that they're giving themselves. None of these things, it sounds slick. You know, y'all on the internet, Facebook and everything, but it don't mean a doggone thing when you look at the family tree, because you cannot trace yourself to mirrors. You cannot trace yourself, even the Ouachita through the Empress of Maya, you cannot trace yourself to the Washington. It's impossible. Oh, man. Anyway, you got the Harry through Malachi Yorkel. You got many others that, you know, different names and titles that they want to give themselves for whatever leader that they want to follow, a grand sheik or whatever the case may be. But it doesn't mean anything when they go to the record book and chase the family tree to see exactly your descendant line. There's 60 million of us here in the Western Hemisphere right now. And it should not be any problem tracing yourself, but you got to do it through your one free national name that you can trace yourself through. This, again, it's not speaking derogatorily, but it's giving you the facts of what happened. So the reason why Malcolm and Farrakhan and others were not able to successfully bring or charge the United States with genocide, because they could not come up with the name or the free national name of the people that was attached to the human family whom the genocide was being committed against. It's no question that genocide is very predominant here in the Americas by the United States upon the Moors. But it takes the Moors to identify genocide that's been amongst themselves, okay, put upon them. We have revealed the facts that are now standards that the women outnumber the men 62 or 63 to 1. Every one man, there's 62, 63 women. This is very, very unnatural due to genocide and imprisonment, all kinds of records that's slighted against you, foods that's been poisoned, all kinds of things that's been experimented and against a people that has not only no recognition, but it has no sovereign powers. So this is you take this line from the 60s on up today when, because I came into the movement myself in 69, but prior to my coming into the conscious of Moorish science, I had been with the Nation of Islam, I had been with the Panthers, and trying to find something about my people. And this was ultimately the thing that, that our people had one free national name. And but we've run into all kinds of opposition. Most of the opposition today is from amongst our own people. It's not the United States that's in the way, although they're doing the genocide, true. It's not the United States that's standing in the way of our freeing ourselves as a nation of people. It's not the United States that's blocking or causing confusion or trying to overthrow the Moorish government. These things are being done by the Moorish people themselves, no matter what category they think they want to justify their existence in. And I'm saying that to say that we recently had, over the last couple of years, we reintroduced a proclamation coast to coast that was signed by different governors and mayors and what have you. But it was the Moors themselves, through various Moor science, temple groups, et cetera, that put up all kinds of protests and opposition, although the proclamation was declaring all of us, all 60 million of us, and Moorish American National, that we were not secrets, which is the current status of all the groups currently being held down through Western Freemasonry. And as a result of that, no one knows the true identity of our people, and it's also holding our people back from joining each other, loving each other enough to come together to free themselves. Okay, so this is one of the things I have to say as far as the United Nations and the 60s are concerned. All this was straightened up when we put before the delegates from Geneva, Switzerland, they're signed it. We got the autograph thing and everything, that we are back. The Marshall Market, as a nation of people, are back. But we have to do all the things that every nation has ever had to do for themselves throughout history when they had undergone slavery and they want to put themselves back to the human family. Everything they've done, we've got to do. And that's what we're doing now on this conference call, on our programs. We're teaching our people who they are, et cetera. And this has really been the plight of the Pleasant Bays from day one. We've never stopped ridding ourselves to the uplifting of our people and the needs of our people, including the laws of polygamy, which, because I ended up with, as we discussed on the other shows recently, we ended up with several wives. But the wives, and I'll give you another little incident that took place, we did have five wives, myself. And the Prophet Noble Dwali, when he introduced the laws of polygamy to the Moors in the Moor side itself, they hit the ceiling. Oh, my goodness. The Prophet had, they already had one wife. They introduced a second wife, a young sister, still in her teens, and, man, they hit the ceiling. Oh, my goodness. Because they were still had a Christian or Western mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And they could understand this. But the thing about it is that the United States, I think, where's the question here? How can polygamy be legal in America? Well,
right.
For one thing, I'm glad you asked about America, not the United States, because America is a continent, and we, by us being indigenous to the continent of the Americas, then we ourselves have our own laws. Every nation of people have their own marriage laws. And three of my former wives found this out the hard way. Polygamy was introduced by the Prophet Noble Dwali to the Moorish America as a people. And it was later reiterated under the Dr. R. Jemmin Bey, my first instructor. And but what it was, that a lot of the Moors, they said, well, you've got to go down to the Christian judges and priests and everything to get recognized. No, you do not. Because what happened, as long as you're a Moorish American and you've got everything to show that you're a Moorish American, then the laws of your culture applies to you. For example, we have a divine constitution. We got it. Not only that, but we got the bylaws to go with it. We got a national ID card. We have everything that's applicable to show that we are indeed the citizenry of a recognized nation of people through our own descendant nature. This gives an authorization for our marriage laws. Every nation have their own marriage laws. This is key. Now, what happened with my former wives, in their case, they found it the hard way. Someone was telling them, oh, look, Pleasant Bay is guilty of bigamy because it's illegal here in the United States. You cannot have more than one wife. Any preacher, you know, any judge will tell you so. And they went for it. And so in their little plight, not that they were that faithful in the first place, but in their plight to adhere to this, they went to have their marriage annulled. But the judge and other lawyers and everyone told them that it was impossible to get a divorce from me under our natural laws of a polygamy, which is under the guise of the Moorish American Constitution, and also our Holy Quran, okay? And you cannot supersede these laws. And the sister will be speaking on this a little later, but I just want to give you the legal background to it. Now, what happened, in order for Fear, which is the name of one of the wives, there was Fatima, Rosalind, yeah, And in order for them to get a divorce, they had to go back to the United States under their Christian concept. In other words, they could not go as a Muslim. They had to give up their Islamic ties. They had to give up their Moorish American national ties. In other words, they had to go back to slavery and join the United States in order to get a divorce, a Christian divorce, from in their land, in their under their constitution, from me, because our marriage laws was very legitimate, very legal, very authorized and recognized. Okay, and they did not believe that because they were listening to some of their Christian buddies, and they found out the hard way that in order for them to get a divorce from it, through any law firm, anybody in the United States, you had to become a Christian. The United States is only through the states. They can only give you a divorce decree that's recognized through the Christian concept. As simple as that. And show you how it works. If you recall, anyone who's had a Christian marriage, no matter what you call yourself, the preacher, whoever, or imam for that matter, that was under the Christian concept, they asked you one thing: by the power invested in me by the state of such and such. Thereby, they'll let you know that's Christianity. Okay, that's let you know that's the law of the United States. That the whoever the preacher, the pastor, the imam, whoever it is, that he's been empowered by the United States to the several states of the United States to introduce the marriage law. Now, those laws, you cannot have polygamy, not under the Christian concept. There are several Mormon societies around Utah, Texas, and a few other places that's attempting to do a thing on a sneak or the quiet. As long as they ain't disrupting nobody, they can get it, it's okay. Most of these places have to be unincorporated territories where you have to, they're like having reservations where you can just move out anything unless. Before you can have the laws enforced in the United States, you have to send for them, the FBI, whoever, okay? But this is the real history. Now, when it comes to our marriage laws of the Moorish American, we have our own marriage certificate that's recognized by 186 countries, including the United States and Canada. We don't have any divorce laws because the way that our marriage laws are set up, then you have to consider, the husband has to consider the wife. He cannot fix suddenly. He's got to take into consideration that his present choice determines his future happiness. There's a lot of laws that, in fact, you've got to have three consultations prior to the actual obligation ceremony to be sure that both the he and the her or hers is fully conscious of the fact of what they're doing, because there's something to be children involved from this and the responsibility of the parents to consider who they are when it comes to children. There's a duty. It's a God-given duty that you have to guide them to freedom and put them also. So the marriage bond is not just something to play with or something you go downtown and you do it for the sake of some kind of laws or whatever. No. By the time you have a ceremony, the marriage, a wedding ceremony, the marriage has already taken place, because you find out that it is the law alone that takes the hearts and binds them together to make them one. That's the marriage laws. And man do not have the power to marry you. Okay? So now they can perform the wedding all day. And according to our laws, we can have polygamy as a purification process. Polygamy is not only allowed but enforced in the Moorish American government now, because it is needed in order for the Moors, for the Moorish American, to heal themselves as a nation of people from within themselves, as a nation of people. So, with this in mind, I want to thank you for introducing those two questions. About how polygamy can be legal in America. Only through the Moorish America, we're indigenous to the continent, and we have our own laws. We are a nation of people, not an organization For example, if you are dealing with a religious organization, then you are still duty-bound by the state of which you have got your charter through. And that's a Christian idea again. So, again, you can't do it. That's why you find most of the so-called divine ministers and most and just about all of your temples, they go downtown to the clergy thing, and just like all the rest of the preachers, and they sign up with them. And they, hey, now I'm recognized. But that's not the way, okay? We don't need Christianity to recognize a divine minister, okay? All right. I think that's about cover the preservation part three, I think. I'll entertain any kind of question a little later, but right now I just want to give the preservation sisters the opportunity to vent out a little bit. So, but I'll see, you know, I'll let you go ahead. What, you got any questions? Whatever. However you want to do the show, it's fine with
me. I'm going to come back to you, but I'm going to, if it's okay to you, I'll leave your mic open, and I will let the sister come in. I got a 434 area code, a 402, and a 503.
Well, the 434, that's Aisha. She was there before. At Mecca, she's right here.
Okay.
So you don't have to do it. Just log her in and all is well.
Okay. Okay, Sister Aisha, are you there?
I am here. Gratitude.
Gratitude, okay. Sister. What I would like to know, and I'm pretty sure the audience would like to know, is what is, could you give us your side of what happened back in the day and bring us up to speed from your perspective and how it affected you.
Sister Mecca Plus.
Go ahead, Mecca. That's fine. Dr. Tahaka Bay, on tour. Todd Elbay, from what aspect are you speaking of more?
We just want you to give us a breakdown on the circumstances surrounding the marriage and your eyewitness account of what you know and how that affected you during the time period that we spoke of in the past two broadcasts. Involving the court and the taking of the children and the you know what it was like doing the marriage with the rest of the wives and just give us a generalization.
All right. First of all, greetings to everyone online. I want to rise, giving all praises to my Creator, my Father God Allah, giving a most special honor to my prophet, Noble Dhru Ali, the last prophet in these days and times, giving honor to definitely my Moorish American government, giving honor to our most special radio broadcast to yourself and also to all your listeners and to my family. I'm part of the Pleasant Bay tribe. I have to give a most special honor to my husband because he was the one initially that introduced me to the science of the Moors or Moorish science. And he also laid out the blueprint and the pattern, and I'll never forget this because it's been etched in my brain. When he was bringing the family together, and the brother has always been upfront, always been truthful, but in essence, he established a pattern and stated that if anyone did not think that they were willing to be in this for the long haul, then now was the time to go ahead and vibrate, no ill feelings, no hard feelings, because what we were speaking about was not only establishing a family unit, but also being a pattern for our brothers and sisters as far as the possibilities of man and woman. This was part of our culture, but this was something that really had not been taken on here in the Western Shores. So I have to definitely give honor to my husband for laying out the blueprint and the pattern. And, of course, the success of our marriage collectively would not have been possible had it not been for the divinity in the institution of our marriage. What I mean by that is putting Allah in the forefront, having divine laws, which is our Quran, and living by those special laws. So even though there was no actual manual saying polygamy here in the West, chapter 1, chapter 3, or what have you, we had to basically go by the guidelines established by Prophet Noble Jirali and live and eat and rest with the Quran. As far as the various occurrences that happened, I looked at it because I had received a lot of dreams and revelations, and I received a revelation in reference to us being guided through all the inner workings and inner nucleus of the United States government. I did not quite understand what that special dream meant, and I remember waking up in a heavy sweat. But in essence, because we were, we were so determined to put the Prophet out front. We are not, I'm going to speak for myself. I did not realize how many ways that people could demonstrate opposition because they wanted to put the light out, and I'm speaking about the light of truth, or they wanted to keep our people buried in the coffin. I could not even have fathomed the degrees and the depth to which Carl Mann would try to keep our people buried in that tomb, you know, labeled as property under the 14th and 15th Amendment. I do not regret what I have gone through, because it has made me stronger. I have, and I also wanted to say that when you're speaking about polygamy, I wanted to put this out in the forefront as well. When you're speaking about polygamy, polygamy is one of the highest forms of civilization, but too often, because our people have been under a state of mental slumber, they look at polygamy through Western eyes, which they see polygamy as a bunch of jumping up and down, this, that, and the other. But first and foremost, you have to be able to be into the knowledge of the self and the study of the self just to be able to survive all kinds of lower selves, most especially your own. You may think that, oh, yeah, I'm ready for this, I'm this, that, and the other, but when you're actually speaking about a day-to-day family situation, then all kinds of demons from your own lower self comes out, whether it be in the form of competition, jealousy, this, that, and the other. And you have to make a decision. Either you want to allow yourself to be inconstant, no matter what kind of evil condition or wind blows, or you want to woman up and keep Allah out front, the Prophet out front, and take care of your Moorish mission at hand. So it's not about something demonstrated on a manifest level, because so often as a family, we were also divine ministers. So we were often dispatched into institutions which we had to, which we were also maintaining European jobs at that time, in addition to having temple meetings, in addition to traveling to various institutions, because nobody else had any interest in our brothers and sisters in the institutions. But this was something that we cherished because we are about the business of teaching our people. So I would not change anything. I was the one that asked to become an adept, not realizing at that time in my 20s, what I was asking for. So you definitely have to be careful, because as far as I'm concerned, Allah is definitely a humorous God. You have to be very specific what it is that you ask for. I often ask for having a large family. I wanted 10 children, ended up with several children, you know, whether I had bore them or not, but the way our Quran teaches us is it doesn't make a difference if you have a child or not. All of the children are yours, and not only within your special family, but also as far as your brothers and sisters are concerned, because everyone did not come with the same level of understanding, then that made for an interesting daily demonstration. But it's all good, and, you know, that's my measure for right now.
Okay, sister, well, I certainly appreciate that, and I'm going to go over to the next sister here. You just hold on 1 second. Let me get this. Okay, there we are. Okay. All right, just hold on one moment. Okay, sister, can you hear me there?
Yeah, I could hear you the whole time.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you loud and clear.
Okay.
Could you give us your side of the story? What happened with the incident involving the children?
Okay, first I want to rise and give praises to the great God and give honor to Prophet Noah Drew Ali, giving honor to this to the station, because we're reaching a lot of people, even all around the world. I want to give them honor. I want to give honor to you. I want to give honor to the question. I want to give honor to my sister for her portion of the understanding. And I want to give honor where honor is due. And I want to give honor to the audience. Well, you're asking what happened with the children?
Yeah.
During that period of time? Okay.
Right.
All right. As my sister was given, she gave the foundation of everything, of how our family came together, even though I came a little later than the rest of the sisters, okay? And we had a family meetings all the time. I have to give this. We had a family meeting, and we met with the sisters, and they asked different questions, you know. And if I trying to find out if I was ready to come into the family, or if to come into the family, okay? Because everybody got their portion of the understanding, as the sister said. And I let them all know that if it wasn't time for me to come into the family, then I would wait, because I was asked to be a wife, but I didn't move with everybody else at the same time. So that's
okay.
How I had it. So I brought Tarshish. Tarshish was my baby during that period of time. Tarshish and Boaz into the family, okay? But the dealing with the children, okay, I was one of the ones who had stayed home while the sisters would work, and I would take care of the children. So I had to go to the schools, register them in, you know, and let them know they Muslims, and they got headpieces and everything. And if anything occurred at the schools, I would go there and speak to the teachers and sit down and talk with the teachers, because some of them was very prejudiced towards our children because of the stand that they had to make. Because in our laws, it says children, to let you know that the sons and daughters must obey the father and mother and be industrious and be a part of the uplifting of fallen humanity. So these were the guidelines our children always tried to keep. But you always have opposition, as the sister was speaking on. And I'm talking about dealing with family, dealing with schools. first we went to the head. You always go to the head and let it trickle down. And we let them know their dietary, because they were all vegetarians. We let them know their dietary laws. We let them know if they had any problems, because we live right across the street from the special school that we were sending our children to. And if they had any problems, just to pick up the phone and call us, okay, with any of the children. And but we had teachers that were just plain, how would you say? They were just prejudiced, okay?
Prejudice?
You don't look prejudice, because they were Muslim. You don't look at prejudice as being on that level a lot of times. You look at it being the shade of skin, okay? But this was because they were Muslims, okay? And they came, and on top of that, they weren't calling themselves black. They say, I'm Moorish, okay? And so they were really educating the staff. Now, you're talking about children like, how old was it, 12? Yeah, 12 up to, what, 13, 14? 15? Yeah, someone was, they start educating the system when they were just in kindergarten, okay? Let them know that black, okay? This goes all the way through to high school, okay? And and beyond, college too, okay?
Well, where did most of the opposition come from?
The opposition came from our people.
Okay.
It was our people mostly who demonstrated the opposition towards the children because they weren't calling themselves black. They didn't, you know, they say, we got a nationality. Our nationality is Moorish American. Okay? And they stood on it because this is the way they were being taught at home. And then you had some of them that tried to put the light out, as I would say, yes, put the light out on our sons. They we had one teacher who most of the mothers came to find out what was going on, and she kept saying that they weren't mature, or they weren't doing their lessons satisfactory, or you know, different things of that nature. Really, mm-hmm. She was trying to tame them down as being young men. Okay, and not being able to see through the future, because if somebody keeps telling your child that they can't do this or they can't do that or they're not going to go this far or they're not going to go that far, okay, that makes them second guess themselves, okay?
Okay.
So we had a meeting with her and let her know that our son were young men, okay, and they should be respected as such, okay, and when they're telling you that what their nationality is and their religion is, this is what it is, okay? They're not black people. She would give them things that bookwork that have black in it, you know. Demonstrate on those kind of levels and want them to do a black assignment of all these different black people and the children was rejecting that and were calling them who they were, okay? So if you have a paperwork and they talking about Malcolm X, okay?
Okay.
Want them to do a paper on Malcolm X, then they would do a paper on Malcolm X, but they wouldn't call him black like the rest of the children did. Okay? Then that's going to cause a problem in their eyes. Okay? Things are on that kind of a level. All right?
Well, the
principal, we had already gone to the head. We had to go to him and let him know and everything. But still, you know, it's our people, and It's hard to get through to them sometimes.
Uh-huh.
But they did respect that. It had to go that far. It shouldn't have had to go that far. It should have been corrected right there with the teacher, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But it had to go that far that we had to have a round circle with the heads, you know, plus the teachers that were giving the children problems, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Or they didn't want it. Sometimes the boys would want to wear their headpieces to school.
Okay.
Opposition. You understand what I'm saying?
So
we had to
always
be there to support our children, you know, let them know that these are their holy pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And name it for them and let them see it so they will be aware. Okay? See, and that's back in the day, you would call back in the day, you know, and that's like something new coming through. You're not a public setting. You understand what I'm saying? So
right.
We had to always have to be educating them. All right. So,
well, how did the did they have Caucasian teachers there as well?
No.
No. They didn't
not
have
in this,
okay.
Not in that area.
Okay.
It was all Asiatic.
Okay. All right. So I can imagine what kind of time you had there because dealing with the North House, we have a real terrible situation when you begin to talk about and act out something that they're not familiar with. They want to drag you back down. They want to attack you. They want to do all kind of things to be insulting, criticizing, and all that. So I know pretty much what you went through in that situation. But go ahead and continue.
Yeah, because I was the one, because the rest of the mothers had gone to go, were working, and I was the one who was with the children a lot. Okay. Now, when it comes down to the other sisters, when they got some of the sisters had opposition against the way I was handling the situation. Okay.
Okay.
You know, all right. But the children, they were glad somebody was there.
Okay.
All right. So moving on, I had to make that, you know, because the children, they had to fight for their nationality and their creed also among their peers.
Okay.
You understand? So
yeah.
That's a thing they had to go through, and they would talk about it, and sometimes they won't talk about it, you know. But we always were there for them, all right?
Okay. So what kind of way did the other wives think you ought to go at it? What kind of problem did you have with them, if you had any?
Well, it was we always had a family meeting among the sisters, and what's the problem? And some sisters didn't like the way it was handled. They were more, dealing with the lower self. They were more,
okay.
I would say, jealous because they felt as though they could be handling it them. You got people who think on different levels, okay? I was the one who took, as Aisha, who took the children as being one. Okay? Then you had other thought patterns. And they felt as though that's their individual child and they're supposed to take care of that and their individual. You understand what I'm saying? And
uh-huh.
So that's going to be a conflict because of the thought pattern. You have to understand that we didn't have anybody who could show us or have a book that we could read. We had to go through what the prophet's laws were, and everybody was not the same, did not have the same thought pattern along the way.
Okay.
Dealing with Asiatics, okay, and remember we were unconscious. We found out who we were. Praise Allah. Okay. Then you're talking about getting a family together. All right. You're talking about sisters coming together, being one. All right. Everybody saying, yeah, we can do this. Yeah. But you have low self. It's there. And you still have unconsciousness that is there. Okay? So you have to, first, as the sister was trying to tell you, you have to work through your stuff. Okay? And then you had to try to work through somebody else's lower self that was throwing things at you to take you off and make you look bad in front of the husband man. Mm-hmm. Okay? But you have to understand that we didn't have a blueprint. We didn't have anybody who went before us. We didn't know the pitfalls or anything like that. We didn't realize that until we got into it, to polygamy. It brought out that you had to stay in the prophet's law in order to make it through. Okay?
Okay. Well, what about the...
Wait a minute. If you went according to the street law, you wasn't going to make it through. Okay? Not this divine demonstration. If you brought those things with sisters competing against each other and trying to take them off, take you off in front of your boyfriend, and you got a girl over here trying to make you look bad, okay, in front of your man, that kind of pattern, you wouldn't make it through. You had to go through that holy and divine law in which the prophet brought, and you had to get rid of all that kind of garbage, because it was stomping your growth from educating your children, keeping your family together, and the main thing is to keep out front about your people. You are the one who is going to be the blueprint carrier for your people as far as polygamy is concerned, and it had to come from a divine level, okay?
Right.
You had people who might say yes, but they really, in their minds, they still trying to demonstrate that street level, throwing all kinds of things to make you look bad in front of the husband.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Got it?
I got it. Now, let me ask you this. How many do you recall when the children were in school, were there any physical fights between the children and other children who were at school?
Excuse me. Yeah. And guess what? Guess who started it?
Well, who?
Would get all up in somebody's face and they ready to fight after school because they mouthing them and stuff. And then that means, like, if you hit one, everybody else got to fight.
Right.
Because they all Pleasant Bays. You hit one Pleasant Bay, all of them coming down on you.
Okay? Well, how many of y'all was in there at
how
one
many,
time?
How many of the children?
Yeah.
We had... Yeah, well, how many was it?
We had a 15-bedroom.
We had a 15-bedroom house. Mm-hmm. And when the children are fighting, they fighting on their way home, trying to get back home.
Okay?
And the children are the ones who's fighting. These other children, okay? Who get that because they got this, what they call a rag around their head, and they had their feathers on, and they want to mess with, pull their feathers off and throw it to each other, you know. So,
yeah.
And then one of the children will come off talking about they're going to do this and that, and they can't fight. And then that means that the rest of the children got to get in it because they violating.
Right.
Okay? So everybody fighting on their way home. So that's how it starts.
So you had 15 children?
No, we had 15 bedrooms. We had seven. I think it was seven.
That's a pretty big army to be
messing with one and got to deal with the other six. That's kind of rough.
Wow.
You know, it's always one starting it, and the rest of them, and they used to complain about it. They had a meeting with me about their problem, that one of the children, the children had meetings too now. They're coming, you know, call a meeting.
Okay.
And they
sit
around and they be telling, every time we get ready to go home, so-and-so always starting something with somebody, and we got to fight and everything, come home all beat up and everything, and we all clothes all messed up. We got to run halfway home. They be complaining.
Okay.
So when you
so we had one tough nut in the crowd, do or die, and he the
and
army got to back him up. Okay.
Uh-huh, and they were tired. And their father always told them, say, one pleasant day will not bring no whipping home without all of y'all looking like y'all have been whipped.
Okay.
So that was all, okay? They didn't think it was fair, but... But we still had to go to the different schools and stuff and educate the people, the faculty, about what it was that the children had on, and you know, and that they were Muslim, and you know, that. But children are children,
right?
They had to go through that, and but as they got older, they didn't have that kind of problem. Okay. They knew how to handle it. But we always told them to stay within the prophet's law, and we went through the laws and everything. And anybody violated the law, you know, they got punished.
Uh-huh.
Something was taken away from them, or they had to stand in a corner for a while, or, you know, had to go to the second grade of meetings. That's with the family, with all the sisters, you know. And that's how they... That's how they really learned the law, okay?
Well, y'all had a program where if the child did something, they had to stand in the corner.
Yeah.
But see, down here in Florida, with my mama raising us, we didn't have a stand in the corner program. My mama started swinging, you would ricochet off the corner. So
they had the right first. Quran 100 times. You know, we had types of ways of, you know, talking about ricocheting off the wall. My same to me, too.
Line them up, too.
Now, the brother would line them up if it got to that point.
Mm.
And that goes from the youngest to the oldest.
When someone didn't want to tell.
When somebody didn't want to tell who did anything, so everybody got a licking.
Oh, yeah. Well, my brothers would always turn states on evidence on me. When it came down to everybody getting a beat, they say, he did it.
No,
let me ask you this. Did y'all run into the schools that had Caucasian teachers? And if so, how did they react to?
They were different.
How did they handle it? I mean, what happened? Tell me about that.
Well, they did. They were just different. They had a better understanding of what nationality was, and that children said they weren't black. They didn't give them a hard time.
Okay.
You're talking about people who already know about nationality.
Okay.
Okay. All right. So, I got to tell you this. But I got to tell you this about this now. When we were, even though we were in the temple, the children used to put on programs for the brothers in the institution.
Okay.
They used to put, you know, have plays and everything, and you know, for the brothers on different days, like on Prophet's Manifestation Day, they would go in and different plays they had studied, coming from the Quran, bringing it to life. Okay. And they were very, very good at that. But later on in our, if they're dealing with the temple, when the temple decide they won't turn against us and the daddy, and you ain't no Moorish American no more, Okay, you just Negro, black, and colored. Throwing the children over to the side, okay?
mm-hmm.
That's when they're mad with you, okay?
Right.
We had to go through the brothers' demonstration. Then they came at the family. They attacked the family and on a level. And then you had people in your immediate family who just didn't like what was going on anyway, and they dropping dimes on you. You know what that means, right?
Right. Yeah, I know what that means. Arsenic.
Right. All right. And we wind up in court, and the judge and them would talk to the children, you know, without the parent there. You know what I'm saying? Because
mm-hmm.
somebody's saying something's going on. All right, just a word. Okay.
Okay.
You just
all right.
pop on, you know, and that's coming. That was between the temple, man, that temple, as well as some of the in-laws, family members. All right, because it's a very big family. You have half of them was Christian, and the other half was Muslim. Okay, that's the best way I can explain it to you. And when we went and we had to go to court for all right, and then it was just like they were herding us in. It was one of the chapters. It reminded me of when they bring you into court and they want to falsely accuse you of stuff, you know, and they're going to try to split the family up. And the children's never been without each other. You know,
right.
these were, and they didn't understand why all this was happening, okay? And they always give them to the Christian side who just knew they were vegetarians but changed their diet, try to change the way they look, try to change, you know, change things, all right?
Uh-huh.
They didn't respect us as a family, okay, and what we were teaching our children, okay? So we had to go up in court behind all that. One of the judges, he wasn't a judge, he was a magistrate.
Okay.
And he would ask the children different things. And they would give it to him just like they was in Sunday school. You know, who made you? Blah, okay? They went through whatever it was he wanted to know, they told him. So he asked them, were they black? They said, no. And they gave him their nationality, and they gave him their creed, okay? But you still had people that were, as you would say, Masons that was in the family, okay? Eastern Stars that was in the family, that were in the courtroom flashing signs and all this, okay? One of the judges said, one of the lawyers were saying that Pleasant Bay was a bigamist, and the magistrate said, I would leave that alone if I were you.
Mm-hmm.
So he tried to bring it up again, and he told him, I told you to leave that subject alone, okay? Because they were trying to say that Pleasant Bay was a bigamist, and he had all these wives and got all these children and, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff, okay? Because
right,
they ain't know nothing about law. They ain't know nothing about law. So we had to go through that. We had to go through the children being taken away from us and being able to handle that type of situation, which it brought me and Aisha closer together. But the rest of them, when Rome came through the door, they want to grab theirs and say, no, we ain't a part of that, and we getting a divorce. You know, and they wanted us to say the same thing. I couldn't do that. I had to support my husband. And his vision, like the rest of them said that they were going to do. But when our times came down, all that went out the window. Okay?
Okay.
So they were helping them, but they wasn't helping me and Aisha. Okay? Because they were trying to break us. So what we did, in order to break that kind of a jurisdiction over us, we first talked to a lawyer, and the lawyer said, if you want to break jurisdiction, just move to another state. So that's what we did. We gathered our children together, and we moved. The rest of the sisters was trying to keep us there. They told the people that we was moving. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Just like everybody was coming in trying to tear it up. All right?
And destroy this thing.
Yeah, the prophet said that he brought us something that can't tear up. Okay? So we just moved to another state, survived there, went to another state. We went to see Pleasant Bay, got transferred down to not Louisiana, but Memphis, Tennessee, and we just picked up everything and moved closer to him so he could see his children, the ones that we were able to bring with us, because we couldn't bring all of them. All of them, they wanted to come with us, but we couldn't take them because they had Rome interceding that had split the families up, okay? They had split the family up. If you had a child, two children over here, then that's your children. Two children over here, that's your children. That child's yours. You understand what I'm saying? You know how they do when they, they split the family up, and then they want to say it's all different when it's really just one. But some of the sisters went along with it. They went through divorces. They telling them that the divorces, it wasn't really a marriage. It was just a, because they was still hanging on to that bigamy demonstration. And they were saying that they were married and that they could easily get an annulment, but they come upon investigation, they were legally married. And the only way that they could get a divorce is demonstrating on the level of Christianity. Okay.
Okay.
That's the only, because our demonstration don't demonstrate on the level of divorcing. So that's what they did. Okay.
Well, how did that affect you health wise?
Oh well, me and Aisha both lost a lot of weight. Because we were studying, getting bombarded, you know. And we lost a lot of weight, plus we went into juicing, did a lot of meditation.
Okay.
Stayed in the prophet's law, because they made you want to just hurt them, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They was provoking us, all right?
Okay.
And outside of the courtroom, they provoking us. But I praise the Lord that we had each other, you know, to lean on. But I used to always, it was the law shaking the sheets.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Did you all, at any time during the marriage, were there any physical fights between the wives in the house?
Not that I know of.
Okay. Well, that's a good
thing. No, it got heated, but it got heated on a different type of level.
Okay.
And the reason I'm saying that is because you don't have to physically fight somebody to fight somebody.
Yeah.
You can deal it with thought. Okay? You can deal with all kinds of levels. You know, it's more than one way to destroy somebody, and you can do that with a thought if you know what you're doing. But it wasn't on a physical level. It was more on in the ether or in the air, okay? Or it was in the psyche, okay? That's where it was. That's where the battle was, because they were trying to stop us from supporting Pleasant Bay. Okay? They called us stupid. They told us we do everything he tell us do. You ain't thinking for yourself. You know, things of that nature.
Okay.
<Yeah.
laughs> So they had it all figured out. Where are they today?
Huh? Where are they?
Yeah.
Out there in the street somewhere. Wait a minute, hold on.
Islam, you know, Islam, that part right there, I have to add this little part because you asked a magic question about the physical fight. And although there was never really any physical fight, it got heated a couple of times real bad. Okay.
Okay.
I almost had me to the point one time arguing to blow somebody's head off. Okay.
Wow.
And, oh yeah, it got real bad. But the thing about it is that when you look at the bottom line of it, when it comes down to the sisters making a decision, when it comes to the family, the children, the success of the Moorish peoples as a whole, this is really the bottom line of the whole thing. The reason why the family was together in polygamy in the first place, it was dealing with the nation of people. This was the substance. And all those that had opposition and put up fights and talking about people, and including the other wives, the former wives, you ask any of those people that had to talk about Mecca and Aisha down through the years, and you ask them right now to this very day, what did they have to show? And none of them got no marriage. They don't have no home. They ain't got nothing, but they can tell you how to tear up one, but they ain't got nothing to show.
Mm-hmm.
You see? And that's the part that's very key, because you find, check out your people, your references. Everybody want to get all in your business. See what kind of business they got. Do they have a successful home? What about work, you know? What have you showed that they have been successful in building, including the family? But if you check the record, they ain't got nothing to show. And I just had to throw that out there because that's where it is, okay?
Oh, yeah, I'm aware. I'm very good at checking it out. I run into all kind of situations.
That's how it was, you know, and that's a mental stress. Okay, because the brother wasn't on location, and he had gotten locked up and dealing with the federal demonstration, okay? Mm-hmm. And then you got people trying to since he's not there, they trying to tear up your family, you know?
Right.
But then you found out what really is family, you know? And a lot of times it's a hurting thing. You pass, you know, it's going to be all right. And trying to keep the children stable, you know, because they were going through traumas too, you know.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, you got to deal with the whole family. See, when you're dealing with a family, you're not dealing with somebody just jumping up and down. When you're talking about polygamy, you're still talking about a family. You're not just talking about the brother and how many wives he got. What about the children? And what they go through, okay? And to this day, we still have the children coming to us, you know, if they're in any kind of adversity, to ask for advice, you know, coming from their laws. You know, when they really want help, they'll come home, okay?
Okay.
Just like everybody else. It's a family affair, just like everybody else, okay? But it's
now,
just on a higher level.
Well, now, does that include the children of the ex-wives also?
Yeah.
Okay.
They remember. They know who to come to when they want answers.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Then you have the children. You not only have dealing with just the children, your family, your immediate family, then you got your grandmother, grandfathers on different sides and everything. Everybody. Okay?
Okay.
Nothing. Children, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When it comes down to the children, that's and the wives, that's another very key thing. Anytime you're dealing with a polygamous situation, or whether you got a father and you have children that he did not father himself, got an obligation situation there. Okay. Now the key to that is, that it is of the utmost importance that mother must give that child to the responsibility and the duty of that father. That's key. Although he's not the natural father. Okay. But if she does not, if she take that child off to the side with a whole bunch of get your cools and, you know, me and you, we all right thing, and isolate the father, the head of the household, isolate him away from the responsibility of the child, it's going to create such a bad ether and a bad reflection, that child will never, ever master and be able to make a stand, no matter if it be he or she, it doesn't matter. But that's the responsibility according to our law. And I just want to pass that off to the Morris who's listening, okay, that when you get in a situation, there's a reason why and the husband or the father must select first from those women whose children have been off and the father is not in the picture. But the sister's there with the children. I think Minister Paulette brought this up last night in her class. About the sisters with all them children and no men in it, no fathers. Okay,
right.
So when the husband man or when that father shows up, then that woman he's more important to that child than he is to her. That's how a kid is. That child's life is more important that he have complete mastership and help guide that child. Than his relationship is with her as husband and wife. That's how important that is. The child, if you notice in our divine constitution, the husband must support the wife and the children, but the wife must obey the husband and still take care of the children. So the children got it on both ends.
Right.
Okay. So I wanted to pass that on because it's very key, and I've seen many children suffer because their mother did not give her child, what she called her child, to that father. And that's a terrible mistake to make, especially in Islam, especially in polygamy, and especially in Moorish America. I'll get back to the sisters.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Isha.
Okay.
Oh, she can't hear me.
Hold on a second. Let me open back up the line.
Yeah, can she be on the line with me?
Sure. Are you there, sister?
I'm here.
Okay.
All right. Well, now, tell me about the time that you were involved, Aisha, and Mecca went there, and you was dealing with the situation with the children and the wives.
Most of the time, most often, it was Mecca and I that were dealing with the children. I tried to demonstrate more from a creative mode. Mecca was speaking about having plays, and the children often had instruments and things of that nature. I love to create various conditions for learning because we still have to have classes as far as Sunday school classes, things of that nature. So often I would take a chapter, and depending on, as Mecca stated, dealing with celebrating the January 8th, our Prophet's Manifestation Day, we would have plays founded upon a special aspect of the chapter. For instance, chapter 15, dealing with Yehoshua being tested and dealing with the tempter. Two of our older sons, one played Yehoshua, on a holy and meditative level, sitting there in silent meditation. And then we had another son, I believe was Tarshish, that played as the tempter. And, it was just, not only was it a way to get the children to learn about their culture, learn the laws of our prophet, but it also gave them access into drama, access into speaking, how to get upon a stage and learn how to speak to an audience, because often not only would they perform in front of the temple at that time, because this was before the unfoldment of our nation, but we would also take our family to the various institutions. They also did modern dance, music, drama, things of that nature, things to also bring to those that were incarcerated.
So we would also, we had a very active Sunday school. We would take them to museums. We would take them to the zoo. We take them virtually, you know, we have outdoor excursions. Teach math, teach English, teach how to read with expression. You know, if there was a weakness within certain aspect in classes, because oftentimes I did a lot of data entry, which, you know, allowed me to type a little bit faster. It would be 9, 10 o'clock at night. Here comes a child. Oh, I had an assignment. I have to type a book report. Now, you have the option. You either want to keep that child up to 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, or I had to take on this weight. This wasn't all the time, but, you know, sit down there, type the thing up. Here, you do the research, da-da-da-da, and try to hurry up and get this done. Work with them on various projects and things of that nature. So it was encompassing of the culture of the Moorish, and the children always got from us that you are princes and princesses, you know, of the royal family. Now, I was speaking about royal family from the aspect of because we are, you know, we have a descendant nature, we know what our nationality is, so that in itself would give you a pride. So we always gave them those things to uplift them, to make them feel good about themselves. Now, I did want to touch upon one point that both Mecca and Elihu stated, dealing with the intent, the sincerity, and the faithfulness, because that is key. And, yes, in our marriage laws, it speaks about, where the sincerity is key. So if you have someone whose intent is not honorable, or who looks at polygamy as a game of competition, that thought pattern coming from the mother, because the brother instilled in Mecca and myself, and he was speaking to everyone, but, you know, we took these things to heart. That's how our parents raised us. Even though we both had backgrounds in Christianity, we still had the virtues that were instilled in us as children to be able to recognize Prophet Noble Dru Ali. So we had to let our actions as mothers reflect how it is that you're supposed to carry yourself in the world. You're supposed to demonstrate virtues, responsibilities, things of that nature, cause and effect, you know, be responsible for your actions. So if you have a sister whose intent is not honorable, or they try to skirt around the values that the Prophet has instilled, that in itself is going to not only create a condition between the sisters in the household, it's going to create a condition with the brother, because he's, at that time, he was the head of the temple. So you're dealing with, and we had, like I said, various stations of divine ministers, but not only are you dealing with that first level as far as the mother and child relationship, but you're also dealing with transferring that kind of mentality into your child, because the child is going to do what you do, not what you say out your mouth. They're going to do what you do. So if you're a person that likes to instigate, I'm speaking about from the level of a sister now, okay, because sisters can come up with a whole bunch of degrees. And I know, because when I came into the family, I had to call myself naive, dumb, and stupid as far as different games that, and I'm not going to say women, because women don't compete on a level of womanhood, okay? But quote-unquote females, and I'm not saying this in a derogatory sense, I'm saying this from the aspect of on an unconscious level, that's all that they know. Like Mecca was speaking about, the things out there in the street. So that's going to transfer that kind of thought pattern down to the second generation of your child. So now you have a first level, which is dealing with the direct sister, and then you transfer in those same immoral behaviors into the second generation, which is not, now you got conditions being created between amongst the wives within the, you know, the inner nucleus, and then you want to have conditions created, you know, amongst the children. So that's why it is so critical that we go according to our prophet's laws, and you got to be careful of, you know, bringing and dragging in chains. Not only see the family is like in a nucleus of a nation. So you have got to constantly be studying 24/7 because sometimes tests will come to you from a door that you had not observed. Stupid
right.
stuff, you know, just all hateful stuff. You know, let me see if I can push that button. Now, I was the informer in the family, so I'm always running back and forth to the brother. Such and such did this, such and such did that, because when I came up at the age of 4 or 5, I was taking notes about what my brother did or didn't do when my parents weren't there. So that was inherent in my nature. I came from a family of teachers. But the answer that the brother would always give me is I had to be focused. I had to put my hand in his hand and stay focused on the mission, stay focused on the law. If there was an altercation between sisters, I'm not really speaking about Mecca, because Mecca and I established a bond of friendship. We had to have each other's back because it was the responsibility was basically put on Mecca and our shoulders to be able to, you know, carry on the household. That means that you go shopping 2 to 3 different stores for food and things of that nature. You went on these various trips. That was Mecca and Aisha, Mecca and Aisha. Going to the institutions, Mecca and Aisha. I might have been, you know, tired as I don't know what, but you still had to put the mission out front. And you didn't go representing the Prophet Noble Dhu Ali in your lower self. So, see, we had discipline and control even on a level as far as the sisters were concerned. The brother was like, no, you can stay home. You have rocks in your jaws, you don't need to go out there to the institution teaching and instructing because, you know, people will pick up on your body language. So that was a training within itself. And as far as that informer level, the brother just kept putting me back to study self. I had a sister that would come to me, and I'm like, sister, you know how you try to go one-on-one first. Sister, I don't think that what you did was in order, whatever. And the response would be, prophet said, study yourself. Now, that in itself will make you leap over there and try to choke somebody out, but you have to maintain discipline and control because, for me, I had a lot of opportunities to be able to pick up a 2x4 and crack somebody upside the skull, but I would be doing a disrespect to my husband's station, the household. I'm thinking about the nation, so that in itself often would put me in check, and I'm not going to sit here that there weren't many nights that I would cry because I couldn't have my way or I thought that somebody should be raped across the coals and they weren't. Why is it that? And if I did get into some kind of altercation, mouth to mouth or lip to lip back and forth, because the brother, you know, you don't be arguing back and forth because that's a demonstration between fools. Who was the name that they would call? The brother, Aisha. I'm sitting there like, what are you calling me? What about this one over there? What about that one? Don't you see this one trying to, you know, tear down a house and you calling my name? And later on, I had to appreciate that because that was still a form of discipline and control for myself. I'm steady looking outside. Do you see Sister X, Sister Y, Sister Z? Because I'm not into a lot of names and what have you, you know. And they could be doing all kinds of demonic things. Or let's say if somebody had the position of secretary and they'd be sitting there rolling their eyes, you know, within the meeting or something like that. But I was held to a higher standard along with Mecca as far as why are you even on that level? Or, you know, and the brother would always put us back in the law. You know, what does your prophet tell you? You know, so in essence, you had to suck it up. You know, you had to kind of wrap yourself around your lower self in order for you to be able to go on missions or what have you, because when you drop down in your lower self, and our household was moving at such a fast warp speed pace, even back then, because, you know, we had had a whole bunch of computers, this, that, and the other. If we were given an assignment, we had to go to the library. We had encyclopedias, look it up, research. So Mecca and I often would study together, and little did we realize at that time that all of these missions, this, that, and the other, and I didn't like going to a particular institution because, to me, it was PhD more. In that special institution in Jessup, Maryland, never forget, House of Correction, where we would get a subject matter, get sent out on a mission. Brother would ask for me some kind of off-the-wall question. I couldn't answer it. Well, I'm not going to tell a falsehood and try to make up something more. I'll get back to you. But I didn't like that feeling of, I'm looking like a fool. I don't know what I'm doing. But this was our training ground. And then when I would go back to, you know, get the proper question answered from Brother Pleasant Bay, that was my my training, you know, and the brother let me know, he gave me a key. He said that, you know, brothers and sisters that are in the institution, they have all day and all night to be studying. But, you know, like Mecca and myself, we had to take care of the children. We had to go work on the European jobs. And Mecca was also, you know, we rotated that. So there were times, You know, for a long time, Mecca maintained work outside on a European job as well. So, and then the other fallacy that they tried to put out was that, oh, yeah, the brother's sitting home and y'all out there, he pimping y'all and all this kind of foolishness. Well, this brother was an accountant, a tax man. He made more money in 4 months' time during tax season than I did all year. But yet, if you were to look at it from a manifest level or some demonic level, trying to tear it up and take, you know, take it off, then those that had some kind of petty or calm mind would go for that mess. So as far as Mecca and I were concerned, our job was to try to, you know, make sure that the children came up wholesome, pure, you know, according to law, knowing the responsibilities, and things of that nature. So I just wanted to put that out there. And, as you know, as far as the things that we went through with the court, it was a twofold attack on a conspiracy level. And when I used that term, conspiracy level, back then, they wanted to say that I was crazy. Now, here you have two sisters that, you know, taking care of the children, doing everything that they're supposed to be doing. You have those who wanted to be out there in the street hanging out or dealing with alcohol or what have you. And Rome would cater to those that were, you know, trying to be buried in the coffin demonstration, okay? But for those that were trying to stand for the truth and their culture and their heritage, those are the ones that they keyed in on and trying to take them out. So it was a twofold thing, dealing with let's try to destroy this man's character. And I guess they figured that the sisters that he had in his household were so weak and on such a manifest level that he could destroy the entire family. But they didn't know anything about Mecca and Aisha, you know. So I just wanted to throw that aspect in that the thing about it is when that judge demonstrated that gavel to that to put that brother on a charge of conspiracy because this brother had not done anything, and that's what I meant by the spirit of masonry, some Masonic demonstration to try to put the light out, and you know, as far as the form of Brother Pleasant Bay. When they did that gavel of 57 months, you're talking about close to 5 years. Now, had we been on any kind of manifest or carnal level or what have you, then we'd have been out there in the street looking for some other brother and later for that. And believe me, you, there were brothers that tried to, I mean, the brother, you know, there were brothers that tried, we trying to study the law, trying to, you know, because it was a lot of colorable laws that were against us. As Moors and also as far as our culture were concerned, but there were brothers that wanted to try us to see are we on as weak a level as the rest of the sisters. Because when you sit there and you talk about you got a Pleasant Bay name and you want to demonstrate on a whorish level, then that makes the brothers want to look at us like we're on a horse level as well. So there are right. oftentimes, yeah, we had to, I'm sorry, there were oftentimes when we had to throw the brothers out of our house. You know, don't come in here with that garbage because our husband is not dead. You know,
yeah,
and that's real.
We used to say we are, our husband's not dead and we are no widows.
Yes.
Okay. Well, sisters, yes. let me, we're going to take a quick break. And when I come back, we're going to deal with the subject of sex.
What?
Okay?
What'd you say?
I'm going to take a break. Okay. And I'm going to take a break. And we're just for a few minutes. When we come back, then let's discuss about the sex in the marriage.
No.
Okay. Okay. Well,
yeah,
I'm gonna take
you
a break.
Can bring it on. I got something
oh.
for you.
Okay. All right. We'll be right back. To Tahaka Archives. The way to access that is to go to
www.taharaarchives.org. That's TaharaArchives. That's taharaarchives.org. We placed a ton of new videos in there, PDF files, and Word documents. Don't hesitate. Get on over there and check it out. Okay? All right.
Okay, Moses, we're back, and we're speaking with the wives of Grand National Chairman of the Moorish American Government, Elihu Pleasant Bay, Mecca, and Aisha. Sisters, your lines are open, and I want to ask two questions, because I know that you all live, I don't know if you live in a area where your house was sitting off by itself, or if it wasn't and you were in between neighbors. I want to know how did the neighbors react to your lifestyle, and how was it when it came to sex between the wives? And tell us about that. Could you answer that?
Okay. All right. The question is, how did the neighbors think about it? Well, the children used to play with their children.
Okay.
And we were in a ocean right now. You know, we're away from a whole lot of people. Okay, but back then, the children played with the neighborhood children. If anything they did wrong, they know they could come to us and let us know, okay? And we would take care of it, okay, if the children were out of order. Now, when you're dealing with bedroom, that's a private and holy place. And we do not know what happens in the bedroom, according to our law.
Uh-huh.
Okay. That's all I have to say.
Okay. All right. Now, how you see it, sister?
I see it the same way. Mecca and Elihu have their a special marriage. Aisha and Elihu has her special marriage, but we are still a family. Each of us has our own individual chamber. Because you have to remember, when we first started in the broadcast, we were speaking about polygamy as being one of the highest forms of civilization. So it's not designed for you to be jumping up and down. If we spend the majority of our time manifesting on a carnal level, nothing would get done.
There you go.
So I just want to state that fact. You're dealing with it's a balance dealing with our individual marriages because, you know, Mecca has her quality time with the brother. I have mine, and we still have quality time together. So, you know, in reference to, you know, being about our Father's work. I have to put it that way. You know,
okay.
We can't, you know, be a benefit to the nation and we're on a manifest or finite-minded or carnal level. So a lot of the demonstrations and the revelations that we receive comes from an ethereal plane. And you have to be able to be open to divine guidance. You can't do that with your mind hung up in somebody else's behind.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
I want to give an example, okay? I have a... you have not only... We're demonstrating polygamy, and then you have monogamy. Mm-hmm. When you are with your wife, if you're married, or anybody's married, and then with their husband, they don't discuss what occurs in the bedroom.
Okay.
And always been raised that way. That's between you and your loved one. Okay. And Allah. All right.
Okay.
So,
my question was trying to get to in the polygamous marriage, were there any disagreements between the wives when it came to excuse me
like that.
Excuse me. When it came to the relationship between the wives and the husbands, was it anything like, okay, well, you're not spending enough time with me, and I would, did any of that ever come up?
No.
Let me help you with that part right there, Mo.
Okay.
Okay. For one thing, you have to get clean away from the Western concept, because if you notice here in the West, everything is based upon from the neck down.
Right.
Okay. You can't even buy a car without it's all there. A bowl of cereal, if everything is advertised from the navel down, et cetera. And but when it come down to marriage, that's not what it is. So when in a polygamous marriage, one of the things that's required that a husband, that's why the Prophet said you can have many wives you can afford. If you cannot afford to provide your wife with an individual, like right now, if Mecca or Aisha decided to, left for whatever reason, go, they would have a complete household themselves right now. They got their own beds, their own TV, everything. Okay?
Okay.
So, and the privacy of the chamber, for example, I rest by myself the majority of the time. And the reason why, because when it come down to, look at Solomon with all the wives and concubines and things that he had within his kingdom. When he usually have the sex thing, as you call it, when that went on, they were usually during the time of a woman's ovulation. Because
that
idea was to create a baby.
Right.
Okay? And that was the main purpose. Like any other species, when you in heat or whatever the case may be, that was the purpose for it.
Right.
Okay? But here at this plane, we get into the level where you do it for pleasure and some other thing. But like Aisha just said, if that's it, you're going to get into the false sensation, ooh, baby, baby, you ain't going to get nothing done. Much less to raise a nation of people.
Right.
Because if that be the case, like I said, you don't have a couple dozen children just by no accident. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So at the same time, somebody had to get some work done. And if you are pulling sheets with a woman every night, you ain't getting nothing done no way. Very, very little you're going to get done. And the reason why, because she got her thoughts going on, and particularly if she ticked off at somebody, and you wonder why you wake up tired, because whatever she thinks is going through you.
Uh-huh.
And you be fighting her thoughts all night long. And then, so I rest in my chamber by myself.
Okay.
So there's a time for everything, but right now we're in the business of uplifting fallen humanity, even amongst ourselves. Okay? If a sister don't want to hear what I got to say about the Prophet and what this chapter here means, it's time for her to go. We ain't got no business together no how. Okay?
Right.
So,
well, let me ask you this now.
It's not from the Western point of view, all right?
Right. Well, what about in the temple? When you were in the temple, there were other polygamous relationships. How did they fare? Did it work out all right that you know of? Or were there any?
Man, in the temple, that's like one of the reasons why I lost the first three. And I tried to tell the sisters then, all the brothers want to do is jump up in the name pleasant bay. They don't care nothing about you. But they've found that out the hard way, okay?
Uh-huh.
So as far as polygamy is concerned, there's only been one polygamous marriage since Noah Dwiley, and that's been me.
Okay.
To be successful and be with the law and to know what the heck we're doing.
Can I add something to that?
Sure,
there has been an attempt to try to copy what we have done, but the reasons have not been honorable. Because, again, I state, our finite mind can't comprehend things on an infinite level. If you try to go into a polygamous situation
with straight up carnal intentions, whether it be from the brother or the sister or both, it's not going to work and it's not going to last. And I can recall a family, because when we were coming up, there was really nobody that was demonstrating on a polygamous level and be man or woman enough to say, yeah, this is my family. They want to go around the corner or up the street, around the corner, you know, that kind of demonstration. And for a Negro, black, colored thought pattern, yeah, that's acceptable. Well, you expect a man or woman to do that. But when you talk about bringing it all under one household, respecting one another, pooling your resources together, cooking together, you know, and putting it back into the family and the culture, as opposed to spinning everything out for the European demonstration, see, our demonstration was founded on Allah, Ali, and me. That's it, okay? Mm-hmm. The laws of Papa Noble Jir Ali. The other family that I called to mind was trying to demonstrate on that type of polygamous aspect, but they had all kinds of carnal demonstrations in mind. So, no, that did not last. It did not work. And that's one of the reasons why our children had it so tough, because they didn't have, a nation that, you know, with other families and this and that and the other. You know, in essence, we were out there by ourselves, you know, trying to do the best we could and following the guidelines of the Prophet, because we did try to, where's the nation and that kind of demonstration. But no, if it's not founded on the laws, you know, and we are blessed to have a theocratic government, we are blessed to have, you know, Moorish nationals that are conscious and things of that nature. But polygamy is not mandatory. And if you have not mastered your own lower passions and your own lower thinking, then you might as well not even go into that realm, because you'd be talking about destroying lives, because you're talking about a family, you know, and it's not on some kind of, you know, manifest a carnal level. That has nothing to do with it.
Praise the Lord.
All right, well, I'm getting ready to open up the phone lines, and what I would like to do is I would like to leave the you all's lines open, and I'm going to ask the audience, if they got questions or comments, please make sure that you tell us who you are, where you're calling from, and what's your question or comment, and who are you asking this question or comment to. I'm going to start with area code 503.
He must
503, could you tell us who you are, where you're calling from, which question or comment?
Islam, this is Dr. Pearson Bay calling from Portland, Oregon Territory. How are you,
I'm fine.
Praise Allah, honor to the Prophet Noble Jir Ali. For the whole Pleasant Bay tribe, I just I wanted to ask the question, as far as I know we don't deal in time, but I wanted to get the ages of when y'all started y'all divine movement within y'all family, you know, as far as that the beginning stage, I understand there was a lot of different sisters too, but I also wanted to know the strength or the knowing of the of chapter. Young man, beware the warning for all young men regarding the two different plights of the sisters. That was it within itself, but I want to know as far as with the Pleasant Bay tribe, how was you able to sift out, or do it just sift out itself, the higher self and the lower self? Gratitude.
Law, Sister Matt Pleasant Bay. Really, if you felt okay, you wanted to know when it started, when we started our family.
Right.
Yes, so I was like 30, 29. I was 29 or 28 when I came into the family. okay? But as far as how you're able, in the beginning, how you're able to recognize these lower things, the prophet always said study self. But during that period of time, the temple wasn't really pushing it, but our husband man was. And they had always explained things on a manifest level. But I'm trying to get this right. Because in your mind you think that you can handle the situation and that you don't have any mean bone in your body until you get into certain situations in the polygamous demonstration that you thought that you would never, you were never on that kind of a level, but it tends to bring things out so that you can see yourself, all right, for what it is, and see your thoughts for what they are, okay? We're putting it into motion. We're not just reading it out of a Quran. We're not just reading out of the Divine Constitutions or any of the literature. We're not reading it. We're living it, and it's different when you're living something. When you're living it day by day, you have to use, when you find out you can't use the old ways of how you resolve problems, it forces you to use the prophet ways of to resolving problems. And then you find out that that works. And so you have to let that other demonstration go because that's not of a benefit. That's how this the polygamous demonstration, that's what it brings out in you, okay? You have to live it. You can't just talk the talk. You have to walk the walk. And when you find out that you have problems within self and you find out it ain't everybody else, it's you. Okay, then you have to deal with you. Peace.
Okay. All right. Area code 702. Area code 702.
Aisha?
Area code.
I'm here.
850. 850. Are you there? Okay, I'm going down to area code 704. You ain't talking. All right, let's go to area code 402.
Islam.
Islam. Let us have
praise
it.
Allah, honest to the prophet. Good job today again, once again, Brother Tiger. We want to give you honors. And praise Allah, honest to the prophet. My question was to Dr. Ellen Pleasant Bay, the first question.
Can you speak a little louder? Can hardly hear you.
Can you hear me now, brother?
Yeah, I hear you.
My first question, I want to say praise Allah, honest to the prophet. And my first question was to Dr. Pleasant Bay, and then my last question would be to the sisters. First question is, by us being a young Moorish nation at this particular time, would you suggest that we entertain that as a nation or the polygamy part right now as a nation? And my second question to the sisters is, if they had a opportunity to do everything that they went through, would they do it again? And at this time, are they happy with, their circumstances at this time? Islam.
Okay. Grand National Chairman, did you hear the first question?
Yeah, as far as the nation and polygamy is concerned, I would recommend all Moors become aware that you do have these laws within your culture, within your society, within your nation. And to make yourself fully aware of the benefits of the law. However, I would definitely recommend everyone go for the character building lessons Go through your Circle 7 Quran, get your house in order with those lessons first. But constantly be aware that the laws do exist. But I wouldn't try it. I wouldn't recommend polygamy to my worst enemy right now. So you got to get yourself together. You got to be prepared. And I'm going to do that by changing character with the character building lessons in the Quran. Islam.
Okay. Sisters, y'all heard the last question?
Yes.
Okay.
If we had the opportunity, would we do it again for myself? I would have to say yes, because I would not be who I am today had I not gone through various buffetings. And I just wanted to point out that everything was not stick the key in the door and have hellfires come out. You know, that was not a 24/7 demonstration, because the household was run according to the laws of Prophet Noble Jir Ali. Now, am I happy? I would have to say yes. But see, when I first, you know, came into the concept of polygamy, I was 19. So I was looking for happiness outside of myself. I was looking for outside things to make me happy. And once I came into the realization that anything that you are looking for outside of yourself, you know, you're in essence making it a god. So I had to learn, and I consider myself still a student, and I, you know, am never going to stop studying until I'm fruition itself. So I would have to say, yes, I am happy, because I'm learning, and I realize that happiness comes from within myself. And when I'm, you know, hooked up with my God state, I'm able to see the God within my husband. I'm able to see the God within my sister wife. I'm also able to see the gods within my Moorish brothers and sisters, even those that would try to destroy us as a young nation of people. You know, but looking at it from a universal aspect, truth can never be destroyed, and neither can divine love, peace, freedom, or justice. So that's my measure.
Okay.
Islam. Okay, that was most. I want to give the sister high honors for that demonstration. I asked if I would do it again, and my answer would be, as the sister said, yes, because of the lessons that I've learned from it about myself. Okay, and it made me a stronger person. And I'm able to, it makes you go within dealing with the self. I mean, and the lessons, it helps you to distinguish between truth and falsehood within yourself. Because it was one mission we was on, and we went to this Sharam, what you call it? Ashram.
Mm-hmm.
We went to an ashram, and because our husband had recommended us to go there instead of going to the temple, and they were dealing with self also, and looking at you as being God. So we went there, and from that, and we used to get lessons from the ashram, and it would tell you that whatever happened to you, you brought it on yourself. Okay, because this was thought. This is what you thought, and this is what manifested. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So my sister was very upset about that one, and I ain't bring all pull all this to me. And so I started laughing about it, and that was my reaction. Okay. Then it said that you can't nothing outside of yourself affect you unless you bring it in, open the door, and let it in, okay? And
right.
That was that knowledge. It hooked me up with, I could see the prophet, okay? Prophet's lessons on a different level. And I would not trade that experience, and we had many experiences, for nothing, because it helped us raise our thoughts to a higher level, you know. and that we didn't look at things on that cardinal level like other people were doing to us, it reversed and said, well, what am I doing to myself? You know,
okay.
My could manifest these anything, you know, so if I change the thought, I can change the condition. Okay, so with that knowledge, the knowledge of self, just going through every aspect of our journey, because it was a journey for me, that it helped me grow, and I'm quite sure it helped my sister grow too, you know, and it gave us a better understanding of the Prophet Noble Drew Ali and what it is that he really wanted us to do, because we learned meditation. We were doing meditation, but we really learned meditation. You know, we could manifest different things, you know. So it was a beautiful experience, and even for the children, it was a beautiful experience, okay? So after we got away from all that confusion, it was just like Allah had us going in different areas, finding different people that spoke. Even though they may not know Prophet Noble Drew Ali, they spoke to prophets. Okay?
Okay.
So I would say, yes, I would go through it again. And yes, I'm content. And when you are content, you're happy. Peace.
Peace, sister. Okay. All right. Area code 586. 586, are you there?
Islam.
Islam, what's on your mind?
Islam, I have two things. I have a question and a comment. And this is Swift Angel and Divine Minister, Prince Jordan Bullis Bay. First I rise to give praise to Allah, honors to Prophet Noble Drew Ali, honors to his citizens and officials of the government. I have a comment for the Pleasant Bay tribe. Well, you guys have stuck with Pleasant Bay, and I give you high honors for doing that, because that means you have unity in your family, well communication, and that means that you guys stand up for what you believe in. And you guys have taught me to be myself, and Swift Angel number one has always, basically, he's always pushed me to go further in my studying, to always go look what's behind the word, what's behind the person. And I have a question. What is necessary to have a second wife? Does the first wife have to invite her in?
Okay.
Oh? I don't...
I'll answer that one. When it comes to the second wife, third, fourth, fifth, or the minute that can forward, that's the husband's decision, ultimately. Now, hopefully, if the other wife or wife is in harmony with him in his house, there would not be any discord or inharmony. So that decision is up to him. He's the one. Because the wife is not coming in to marry another wife. She's coming in to marry her husband. So that decision is ultimately to him. The key to this whole thing is that the first wife or any other wife that marry a Muslim man should always be aware that it is his rightful order if he decides to take unto himself a second wife or a third wife, for that matter. In other words, he can go into polygamy because that's a part of his culture, that's a part of his law, that's a part of his government, his history, everything. So it's really up to him. And she should be fully conscious of this whenever she goes into a marriage with a Muslim man, period, especially with today's Moorish American government, Moorish American nation. And the reason why, because we are a very beat-down people, and we got to go through a complete healing process to rebuild ourselves as a nation. And polygamy is one of the greatest healing elements, or civilized healing element, to undo some of the terrible things that has been done to us as a people, if we can put ourselves back as a nation. So that's how I'm answering that question. A young God, thank you so much for your question.
All right. Area code 443. Are you there? Wait a minute. Area code 443.
That's Palmer.
443. Are you there? First of all, let me get the line open. All right. Area code 313.
Are you there, 313? Brother Oscar, peace to the Pleasant Day Tribe. This is Oscar Berry Bates, calling in from Detroit. I was listening as the sisters were speaking. And I know
you got a lot of background noise there, brother.
Excuse me?
You got a lot of background noise there.
You still hear it?
Oh, yeah.
I was just thinking when you was talking about the children, referring to the sisters, I know a lot of what it's like to grow up and, you know, like how the children, they didn't have any support from the neighbors and whatnot for expressing their nationality, you know, fights and whatnot like that. You know, I went through a little bit of that myself just for having what they say is a funny name, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that go back to, you know, I have some Cherokee bloodline, so I was Black Indian, I thought. Now I know I'm a Moorish American. But
okay.
It made me just think, you know, maybe some of these conditions would be better, or would it be more suitable? Like, I have to get honors to the brother, always say, from the Royal Council, Kunshu Mahatra Heru Bey, always say that Moore is, of course, the prophet, that Moore should live close together. But I just wanted to put that out. But my main question is, I like a little more clarity on our no divorce law, Islam.
Islam.
And anybody can answer the question. Peace.
Okay.
Was that the question? Would not have a no divorce in our laws?
You want a little more clarity on the divorce laws.
Okay, all right. The reason why we don't have a divorce law is because we are very articulate in our marriage laws. Once our marriage laws are obeyed, there's no need for divorce. Divorce is a Western concept. You don't find divorce hardly in any theocracy, be it Judaism, Islamism, Moorish science, it doesn't matter. You don't find divorces. So, and the reason for that is because you get it right the first time. You know what marriage is in the beginning. That's the reason why you don't have divorce. Divorce is an excuse not to do the right thing in the first place. If you know you got a divorce at the other end of it.
Islam, this is Sister Mecca Pleasant Bay. And supporting what the brother was saying, you both are studying the same law. You're both spirit and a part of a law. When you look in the face of the sister, you should see a law, and she should see you also. So if there's a discord at any time within our law, you can call for prayer. The sister can call for prayer, or you can call for prayer so that you can go to a higher level. But in our marriage, the law is put is first, and if you're not in accord with that of the law of the prophet that the prophet brought us as a nation of people, then you'll find out from yourself if you're studying self, if you're studying the law, and the according to law, the prophet lets you know that not to fix suddenly, because it's dealing with your future happiness. Mm-hmm. So your choice is dealing with your future happiness, so you're supposed to take the time to study, to make sure that this is the right sister for you. Because she definitely has to be, it was have your back and you got hers. I'm going to put it on that kind of level. Okay? So you have a better understanding. Some of the people could have better understanding that you're there for her and she's there for you. And you're going to be there for the long haul. You're going to be there till you cross over and probably be deep and beyond until you be one with the law, because that's the that's the brother's, according to the prophet's law. The brother is supposed to be helping sister to get not only dealing with the marriage, but also dealing with Allah, trying to help her to go back to Allah, and vice versa. They're aiding and assisting each other, okay? So there's no need for the word divorce. As the brothers say, that's a Western concept, but we are holy and divine people, so we don't need any words for divorce. Allah is the one bringing us together. Okay.
And I'd like to add to what the brother and the sister stated, and giving honor to the question as well. Oftentimes, because we don't realize just how deeply embedded these shackles of mental slavery are, we think that the only solution for a disharmony or a disagreement is, well, she got to go her way, I go mine, or what have you. But this is why it is so imperative that we study and go within the self, because there is actually a way. Let's say, for instance, if I had a disagreement with my special husband, I don't have to go out there and use a street demonstration, step to his face or what have you. I can go within, get on a meditative level, demonstrate prayer, speak to the spirit of my husband on a different ethereal plane, okay? And oftentimes that can bring about a harmonious condition. The other demonstration is that we recognize the fact that our husband has the last say within our household, because, you know, the husband receives the law directly from Allah and the Prophet, and he is also our spiritual guide.
Mm-hmm.
So oftentimes, you know, if the husband gives an instruction that we may not understand or we might have some questions about it, a lot of times silence is key. You have to be able to be quiet to be able to hear that still small voice. If you're looking at your other half as, you know, something from a manifest level, then you're not going to get the divinity in the lesson that you're supposed to be receiving, because part of his job is to help you get back to your creator, you know, and we have to give honor to the brother for his special role, because that is not an easy position, you know, and being the God in our family. So there are a lot of divine ways that you can iron out differences that are not readily spoken about here in the West, because they don't have a clue. That's why you have to go within yourself. You can communicate on a level that's not even dealing with it on a manifest plane, and resolve your issues there.
Okay.
Area code 313.
Area code.
313, are you with us?
Islamo. Oh, that's me again, Uncle Barry Bay. Might want to go to the next 313. I know my
All
voice.
Right. Area code 434.
Islamo,
let us have it.
Yeah, this brother Shatara Munir, first I rise, I give praise to Allah and honor to his holy and divine prophet, the government, the officials, and the citizens. And this question is to the sisters, because I'm of a Pleasant Bay family.
Okay.
Praise Allah.
Praise Allah.
And this is to say to the sisters. Now, I once upon a time heard y'all say, when y'all was going through y'all you know, when our beloved Grand National Chairman got locked up under that federal deceit and lies and things for 57 months, and y'all was going through the fasting and the juicing that y'all could see.
Oh,
your brother man, your sister woman know from just looking at them, your psychic powers came mm-hmm. into view. How did you get that to that level? Explain it, please.
Through fasting and juicing and staying in the law, reading the prophet's laws and things of that nature, we could see the people who came through the door whose thought pattern wasn't right. Some of them would come through looking like snakes, that shadow. Some of them come through looking like weasels. Right, Aisha?
Yes, I remember the weasels.
It came through animal foot pattern, okay? And you could recognize it. It was like a second, what was it? Well, whatever we was doing,
wheatgrass. Mm-hmm. Wheatgrass because that's coming from the ancient Canaanite level as well.
Yeah.
And when that crisis hit, I think the word most satisfactory hit that was it was a trauma on all kinds of levels. Even when we were going through that special demonstration, the house wept when we had to leave it. When we received the instruction from our husband, get out of the state of Maryland because there were so many ethereal forces trying to take us out. We had to move, you know, at a minute's notice. And there was no difference between, it was almost like demonstrating in an underground railroad. You didn't even want to eat. You know, we were muftiing 24/7. Every time, you know, suppose that Brother Mufti left off location, here came Rome trying to harass and annihilate the sisters and trying to, you know, break their spirit. So you didn't have any desire to eat. So you had to feed from the ethers of your native plane. Wheatgrass, Mecca and I developed a demonstration. The brother taught us how to take the weight out of a body, okay? We also had a way of going into a ethereal realm where we had to deal with the four corners. And your thought pattern has to be right. We use that when healing our husband, you know, when he went through his special crisis, and we use that in taking that condition that we went through to a higher ethereal level. It was almost as if the whole city was going through this demonstration with us. We felt their support and love, but it was an ethereal battle, and we had to be ethereal with it. So that was where a lot of we actually did see Mecca would see the shadows and various forms of beasts coming through the door, and I would see, you know, various forms and beasts or what have you, or the ether wasn't right or what have you. But see, we had at our hands a lot of power.
Mm-hmm.
Because we were on such a high ethereal level, we actually could step outside of our body. And I have seen the real depth of my lower self, you know, because I'm looking at this sister that was supposed to be breaking bread in the family, this, that, and the other, and she's doing everything she could to try to destroy this family. So I was getting ready to take her out, literally. That's the depth of my lower self, and I recall stepping outside of my body, getting ready to, just like you tried to entune this brother, I'm going to show you how it feels to be entuned. And I was serious about that. Doors start slamming. Mecca had to actually let that sister get out. I was about to take it out, but I wouldn't be here to tell a story. That's why the brother often would call my name, whether it be on a manifest level or ethereally. Aisha, Okay, so he didn't just call us on a manifest. He called us on an ethereal level, and that's a lot of times how we received our instructions, even though Rome tried to shut down the communication between him and his wives that were still standing. We were able to communicate with him through the sixth and seventh senses.
Mm-hmm. Sure did.
Okay.
Yep.
That's why it's real.
All right.
Okay. Area code 402. You with us? Okay. Area code 313.
Islam.
Islam.
Can you hear me?
Oh, yes. Hear you loud and clear. What's on your mind?
Okay, my name is Patricia Stocks-Bay, calling from Detroit.
Okay.
And I give honors to the prophet. I call in to say I give extremely high honors to all three. I have never been taught such a lesson on such a high level. I mean, this is absolutely, it's beyond anybody's imagination. It's like when you say when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. Well, the teachers are here. And it's awesome. All I can say is awesome to all three of you. And I've never heard a polygamy explain such depth and with such sincerity. And that's the word that I see in all three, the sisters and the brothers is talking. Islam, gratitude.
Gratitude,
sis. We appreciate you.
Okay. Area code 443.
Islam,
let us have it.
Islam, I've been trying to get in. This is Divine Minister Anwar Gu Aliel from Baltimore Territory. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. You come across loud and clear.
Islam, first, once again, I rise giving perfect praise to the great God Allah, honors to his prophet, honor to the last prophet in these days, and time prophet Noble Gu Ali. I give honor to the Moorish American government, all its officials, all its citizens. I give a high honor to the Pleasant Bay tribe. And I have a statement and a question also, because I met the Pleasant Bays a while ago when I was in the temple then, and because of that post-traumatic slave syndrome, that chattel residue was still on my mind. And I like, one man with five wives, you know, the prophet said, take unto yourself a wife. And I had no understanding, none whatsoever. So today, and I just love y'all.
We love you too, Mom.
I've been blessed to be in the presence of the Pleasant Bays and the energy, the positive energy, because since I've been on this conference call, not one word of discord have I heard from neither one of them. And I understand completely about polygamy and today. I truly do. And what the question I wanted to ask was, and I don't want to separate these chapters, but is there a chapter that stands out the most to either one of y'all either one of the wives in reference to how can I put this? Amplifying that connection, that positive bond, because all I hear from the three of y'all is just positive energy, and I know with a queen by your side with that type of energy, and a king by your side with that type of energy, there's nothing under the sun that can separate that. I know that to be a fact. So my question is there any specific chapter you know, all of the chapters, I love them. You know, my favorite is The Soul of Man. But is there any particular chapter that you tap into to generate that energy? Islam.
I have two that helps me. One is religion, and the other one is chapter 7. Is it 7? Mo, you got me. One dealing with the belief, faith, and fiction. Chapter. What? 12? It's chapter 7. The friendship of Jesus and Lamas, and Jesus and Lamas, meaning of truth. That's the chapter. So that's the most. That one in religion is the one that helps me get on a balance.
Islam. For me, I have a combination of chapters as well. The first one, which I kind of touched on in Moorish Goddesses and Queens, was dealing with religion, because that automatically, when I go read that chapter, it pulls me up off the manifest to the ethereal and universal level. That's how I, you know, first of all, come out of my lower self. The second one for me would be the chapter on inconstancy. That a special section where it goes into resolution, where it speaks about though obstacles appear in his way. And a lot of times I would meditate on that, because in essence, you allow yourself to get taken off when you take the time out to look at something outside of yourself that you think is creating a negative condition for yourself. The ayat dealing with faith worships at the temple of one not seen, but doubt must see its God. Because, as Mecca has stated before, now the brother, you know, when we met him, he was on a very high ethereal level. We had to get to, you know, we trying to climb up there to try to understand, what are you talking about? You know, break it down. So a lot of times the path that we would walk, you couldn't see the road. So you have to go out on faith and make a way. Because, it, you know, in essence, you have to stand for the prophet no matter what.
What? That's right.
So, yeah, so it's like the creed that the sun doesn't get too hot, the distance mm-hmm. doesn't get too great. That was part of the demonstration, and in essence, the brother would pull us up all the time. What are you talking about? You a Pleasant Bay. You know what Pleasant Bay means? In essence, that's endurance. Oh, my God, where are we going to live? Where are we going to live? They try to kill us. Just drop the book off and keep it moving. We can go to an island somewhere. Where are we going to live? So, yeah, we have to go through all of that stuff.
Yes, the country.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Area code 402. 402.
Islam.
Islam, Mo.
Can you hear me loud and clear?
Yes, sir.
Be loud and clear.
Praise Allah. Honest to prophet, honest to the government. And honest to the brethren, his family. I was considering some of the things that you guys had went through, especially the husband, man, Dr. Pleasant Bay. And I wanted to know now, after you guys done been through this, what you've been through, is it any less? Are you guys being attacked now? The way that you guys were being attacked now that you have established what really should have been established 80 years ago. So how are things in that level? I'm talking about the problems with the Masonic Moors, the problems with the Moorish Science Temple, the different groups. how are they with the growing of what you guys have instituted? How are they now? And I guess I'm directing that towards to the master, and I wanted to give him high honors, you know, and his wife. You know, you can't hardly separate them because y'all won. So praise Allah, and that was just the question that I wanted to know right now, you know, in this time. Peace.
Okay.
Well, the main thing with that is that the difference is during that time we didn't know, we couldn't identify the enemy. We was actually living with the enemy the whole time, but we didn't recognize it. Now we know who the enemy is, what they look like, they sound. Just one word. You could just say the word document. We already know that why you want a nationality. So we know the enemy is now. See, before we didn't know because we had trusted and had so much love that we didn't know the enemy was right there in the Morrisons, but we didn't recognize it like that. So we thought that this was the ultimate thing, and everything else was a test. Mm-hmm. We didn't know that it wasn't a test. That's the way the enemy is. So yeah, so that's what it is. The enemy is made plain before your face now today, now that you're on this level. They're very, very plain before your face, and it looked just like you. Shalom and peace.
All right. Area code 404. Are you there?
Islam.
Islam, what's your question? What comment?
Yes, this Pharisee Mutawir out of Cherokee County, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I want to know, since I'm a Moorish American and I got a daughter, right? And she come to me and say, can she have two dudes? Would that be cool for her to have two dudes? Is she a Moorish American?
Well, I don't think she's going to get a chance to finish asking the questions out of all the saying you're going to be raising. But I'm going to let the grand master
answer. Well, I'll answer the question the same way you and Brenna answered the question when he was asked the same thing, okay? According to nature, understand. And why a bee goes to flower to flower? Never yet seen a flower that goes to be the bee. I hope that answers your question.
Okay. Area code 312. 312.
Good evening.
Good evening.
This is Jacqueline, and one of the North Americans gave me the number to call in. Now, first of all, I think the information you've shared has been so informative and enlightening and encouraging. My question briefly, and I hope it's not out of line, is the impact it has the polygamy taken on the children. I would imagine with a family that is bringing in additional love and unity and the affection, that would help to strengthen them. Have the youth become adults now? And if so, are they demonstrating the impact that having the family go through these various changes has strengthened them?
Okay.
Older children, for the better part, they have grown quite a pace. However, if there was anything that if someone was asking what I would do, I change one thing, then I would change the era of time. 15 years ago, I'd make it today so that I would have you Moors there to help our children.
Yeah.
They needed to help so bad during that time. But they did not have a government, they did not have a nation, they did not have their own flag. It was so much that we have now that they didn't have then. So, but they're still strong. They're just not all government-wise right now. still strong. If you press them, you put them aside, you know. I had one son to go overseas, and he ended up marrying a Japanese sister. But he didn't know how powerful the name Pleasant Bay was until everybody else got to call him Bay and got it bound down as he was going through Greece and other areas. And that's when he found out how powerful the name Bay was. So they're learning. Hope that answers your question, sis. Thanks for asking.
Okay, area code 503.
Islam.
Islam Mo.
This is Dr. Pierce Avey again, calling out of Portland, Oregon territory. I'm going to give praise to Allah and honest to Prophet Noble Drew Ali. I just wanted to give a comment. I'm glad that I got back in because this has been enlightening, and as far as our chapter of the week in the Moorish American government has brought me into a new enlightenment as far as dealing with myself and getting an understanding of my divine calling. I just want to give much honors to the Pleasant Bay tribe. I want to give much gratitude to y'all because y'all truly have helped me and the whole entire nation, and it's nothing that words can say that's going to express, the thankfulness and the honor that is due to you and your wisdom. Besides our love to each other, because we all together, form the love of Allah. I'm just so grateful to get an understanding of my own culture and to get an understanding of who I am and why I feel the way I feel within myself. It's brought that's a form of the history, the reliance of the history is that culture that's in us, and to get an understanding of how to do it right, to follow the prophet. It was so profound of a blessing to get an understanding of what our prophet brought us, and the understanding of get our nation back together. So thanks again. I don't want to ramble too much because I know it's more to get on here, but thank you so much. Islam.
Okay, all right. Gratitude. All right, now I'm going to go to area code 215.
Are you there? 215.
Black
Power.
Black
Power.
Okay. Black Power. What's your question?
You know what I'm saying? I was listening to the show here and there. There's a lot of niggas on here just running their yams. You know what I mean? They're not out in the streets. They're not suited and booted out here in the streets. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, what's up? A lot of people on here talking. They're not out here in the streets. What's up with that?
Well, I don't understand your question.
I'm saying I hear a lot of people out here complaining, you know what I mean? They complaining, but they're not out here in the streets. They're not out here in the streets, toppling the peck of wood. Like, what's up with that?
I don't understand that, brother. Eric Cole, 832.
Islam
Mo. What'd you call I can't hardly hear you. We got a lot of background noise on here.
Apologize about that. First and foremost, let me give honors to the Prophet Noble Drew Ali, and I want to give honors to the brothers and the sisters through all their magnificent struggle. This is Talib L. from out of the territory. I would like to know, asking the sisters, how do we go to the sisters as a Moor? I'm a brand new Moor. You got to understand that as well. How do we go to the sisters? Just give them the teachings that we have been granted to us from the prophet and accept them, expect them to accept that, or get them to have the mind change, to coming over the fence. You know, because they're living in part of this world, but then at the same time, they're seeing us making a transition
doing away with our lower selves and being connected with our higher selves. And they want to be a part of it, but they don't want to be a part of that scrutiny and that finger pointing that's going on. How do we, you know, relate to those sisters that, hey, this is going to be all right as long as you follow the prophet in these teachings?
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we hear you.
All right. First of all, gratitude, brother, for the question. I think that Brother Pleasant Bay had mentioned it earlier in reference to it's very pivotal for the brothers to get their house in order and also get the lessons of the prophet under their belt. You don't have to worry about trying to find a sister. Sisters are going to run you down, okay, because, you know, you have out here in the West by our nation having been, you know, having succumbed to, you know, genocide and wars and all kinds of things deliberately designed to take us out as a people, there is a great outnumbering of sisters to brothers. So all you have to do is make a stand. And you're going to have sisters come to you because they're going to naturally gravitate to power. But the thing about it is you have to be so founded in your law. It's like you have to have yourself established. You don't want to, you know, go to that special sister's house and, you know, she may not be totally on the other, you know, conscious of more science or what have you. And if you do something that she doesn't particularly care for, get out my house. You know, then back there, that Western concept. So you have to be founded in your laws no matter what. And once she realizes that it's Allah, Ali, and you, and you have to also be strong enough to allow the sister time for growth and development, but she also has to know that this is the way my household is run. You're either going to go according to my guidelines, my rules, you know, which are founded on, you know, a theocratic government, or, you know, peace and blessings. You have to be strong enough to be able to demonstrate on that kind of level and not be playing with it, you know, because, you know, a sister will try to bite down into you and find out, are you alive or are you Memorex, you know, and if you are able to be dictated according to the flesh or what have you, you know, you going willy-nilly and, you know, next thing you know, you falling behind some other kind of idea, entity, as opposed to standing and, you know, demonstrating and representing for a lot of profit and being about uplifting your nation. So that's my level of the understanding.
Okay. 832. We have 7 minutes. Your question quickly. 832.
You already got me, Big Bro. Go on to the next one. Islam, the sister just answered.
Okay, my switchboard be jumping and moving on me here. Okay, that is the end of the callers. And Sister Mecca, Aisha, Grand National Chairman, we're winding down to the end of the broadcast, and I certainly appreciate you all for being on here and bringing this wonderful information to light in regards to polygamy and what happened and what how it's supposed to go in a relationship. Very, very enlightening information. And I personally thoroughly enjoy you all giving me that information. And keep in mind, ladies and gentlemen, to dial into your national conference calls that's held 7 days a week, you dial the number 760-569-7100. The access code is 437-966-POUND. That's 760-569-7100. Access code 437-966 and press the pound key, and that will get you into the national conference call that are held 7 days a week, twice on Sunday. And keep in mind, you can get your book, the Book of Ali, and other books right there on MoorishAmericanGov.org, and that's exactly where you go to register with your government, to MoorishAmericanGov.org. You go ahead and put your information in, and on the census,
and you put in every family member name that you can think of right there on that census before you click send. And our broadcast being posted there so that you can go back and listen to the broadcast that we've done here on Moorish Talk Live 100 with the Grand National Chairman and the Moorish American Government. And Grand National Chairman, I thank you so much.
All right.
Are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, he's loud and clear.
Okay. In closing, I would like, first of all, give honor to the Pleasant Bay Wives. They've been very fayish, what can I say, you know. And but I would also like to ask the audience for those who maybe should have been on the call to hear the Pleasant Bay story, especially those, I just call it Pleasant Bay haters. If you don't mind, you refer them to these conference calls or to the Blog Talk Radio show. If they really want to know the truth, they won't have to walk around hating and coming up with these crazy ideas and things. And come on together. You know, my door is always open. The love is always here. But I'm no fool. So come on in. And I want to encourage everyone to please try to listen, and so you hear the truth of what happened in Lawton, so you can hear the truth about what happened. Morris Science Temple Writer has not been effective in 84 years. Hear the truth about Western Freemasonry and how it has hurt our people. Come on and hear the truth about what it is that you have to offer to the rest of the world as a nation. We have everything that we need to save ourselves as a people. So thank you very much, Brother Elp. Been a blessing and an honor, and I see you on tonight's Holy Night services. Tonight on the conference call. Thank you, Grand Sheik.
Okay.
Love you.
Okay. Thank you all, and ladies and gentlemen, we come to the end of the broadcast. I have been your host, Tamahaka Amana L. Bay, and until next time, you all have.
And tell the world I'm taking your hand. get married. Just wait and see, just you and me.